Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Wessex Safety Hour conference call hosted by Tracy Capstick. My name is Leslie, and I'm your event manager. During the presentation, your lines will remain on listen only, and if you require assistance at any time, please key star zero on your telephone, and a coordinator will be happy to assist you. I'd like to advise all parties that the conference is being recorded for replay purposes, and now I'd like to hand over to Tracy. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Wessex Route. Tracy Capstick, employed as the Route Workforce Health, Safety and Environment Advisor. Today I am in Ivan's team meeting, so I also have with me at this moment Ivan Kimball, Route Director. Area Director. Dean Moss, IMDM Eastleigh. Giles Baxter, General Manager. And Andy Malcolm, IMDM from Clapham. So, I'm quite honoured to be in this environment at this time because overnight there was an incident, and the incident was a member of protection staff placing the block up at Clapham. And the incident became a near miss with a train. Now, route safety advisors generally look on the dark side of stuff, and the things we fear, our biggest risks to our organisation, are man versus train. So we had one last night. Now, one wouldn't make me too excited, I wouldn't be happy, but there have been another two near miss with train incidents on the Wessex Route in the last 3 weeks. There was one on the 14th of the 6th, on the up Reading route. Two individuals were seen by a train driver and caught on CCTV, hurriedly moving out of the way of the train into a place of safety. And one last week down at Eastleigh in Shawford Junction, where one individual, and we haven't seen the CCTV yet, is reputed to have leapt out of the way from the path of an oncoming train doing at least 90 miles an hour with a maximum of 10 yards to spare. So that is the backdrop of this safety conversation. Now, the chances are the demographic of the people listening to this are probably not employed on the track. And you may ask whether it's relevant to the job you do in this organisation. And the answer to that question, I think, is everything we do in a route-based organisation results in somebody somewhere going on to the track and doing a job of work. The next question would be, how could I influence that? And yes, you can influence that by the way you discharge your duties. You may not have direct access to the track staff, and you might not directly put them to work. But the question everybody needs to ask themselves is, whatever I do in my day-to-day work, at some point, I affect the man in orange going out onto onto the lines. So, that's a topic for discussion, and I will ask Ivan if he wants to interject at this point.
Hello, everyone. For me, this is really serious. We've had three near misses. That is three life and death situations. The difference between life and death has been a second or two, so it's really serious. And so what we intend to be doing is getting some material out and people doing stand down briefs in the next week or so, so that everybody is aware and everybody is thinking about situations where they may be getting into where there are risks. So the three incidents are under investigation, and There are screenshots from forward-facing cameras on at least two of them. And we think we've got the third one. We're fully investigating. It was protection staff for a possession. It was somebody doing an inspection, and it was someone carrying out ultrasonic testing. So there's three different situations. We know who the people are for two of them. We're also investigating whether it was a near miss or not on each one, etc. But the point being, there's been three. It's an early warning when that something very, very serious could happen, and we can't have that. We have to be protecting ourselves and our staff. Very serious. Want everybody to consider what they're doing. Have a moment to pause and to think, am I pushing the boundary too far here? We're very clear. We have simple rules. You need to be in a position of safety for more than 10 seconds before a train arrives near you. So that's our simple rule. And if your safe system of work doesn't allow that, then it's not a safe system of work, and we shouldn't be following it. We have the work safe procedure that we can raise formally or informally, but we should raise that if we feel that something's not safe. But for me, it's making sure that we have that safe system of work, and we test the safe system of work, if it isn't safe, then we don't do it. But early warning, three alleged near misses that we're following through and investigating. Everybody needs to be aware of it and needs to be at the forefront of their mind in everything that we do at the moment. So for me, that is absolutely key. And if anybody's got any comments on the call, I'm more than happy to hear those, what people think or whatever, but clear rules, 10 seconds, position of safety, and long has it been so, and everybody with PTS, etc. should know that. So, for me, this is really, really important.
Lorraine? Hello?
Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. Can you open up questions now to see if anybody, or B, has any suggestions that we could take forward in what we do in the next couple of weeks, please?
Certainly. Ladies and gentlemen, your question and answer session will now begin. If you wish to ask a question, please key star then 1 on your telephone, record your name and press the hash key. If you decide to withdraw your question, simply press star 2. All questions will be answered in the order received and you'll be advised when to ask your question, and all of the lines will remain on listen only. And just to remind you, if you wish to ask a question, please key star then 1 on your telephone, record your name and press the hash key. And we have no questions at the moment, but just to remind you again, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please key star then 1 on your telephone, record your name and press the hash key. We have some questions, Tracy. The first one comes from the line of...
Alistair.
You're live in the call. Please go ahead.
Hi, Tracy. It's Alistair.
Hello, Alistair.
Mainly as regards to, I suppose, the last one at Shawford and the first one at on the Bramley line. Why do we think that those that are involved in the near miss alleged by the driver are not coming forward and raising their hands and saying we were in the wrong place?
Oh, that actually is probably the most important question that we'll ever get an answer to. I have some views. We do know Shawford, who was involved in Shawford, because they came forward on Monday. So although at the time we didn't know and they didn't come forward, they have subsequently come forward.
Yeah, but it's that time delay, particularly, it's a bit like your golden hour, that first hour.
Yeah.
We've got that moment to capture information, evidence, and it took a few days. What's in the mindset of those that go on about the track that feel that either they kind of get away with it almost, or if I hide myself, perhaps it will just go away?
I don't know about these two incidents. I've investigated a few in the past, and certain things come around again, and again, and again. One is, they've made a mistake, that's a problem, and they are still fearful of what the organisation does next. And I think that probably still prevails. I think there is a fear factor in there because, you know, you've got to be pretty brave to trust an organisation and put your hands up. So I think that's still prevalent. I don't think it's getting away with it it's said as though you've got away with something for your own benefit. I don't think people assume they've got away with it. I think they just would rather walk away and not go through, you know, the resulting pain of an investigation, irrespective of what the outcome is. So again, that comes down to fear. And I think if you have a really, really bad one, and if you talk to any old railway man, they will be able to remember the one time where they had to jump in a bush to avoid a very serious incident, and a lot of them will talk about those, and they will say they learnt their lesson at that moment in time, were highly embarrassed and didn't want to go through the pain again. So the public humiliation, if you like. So I think there are some things in a relationship between a man, his peers and his organisation which will always be problematic in coming forward. Does that make sense?
Yes, yeah, no, I get that. I get that it wasn't sort of getting away with it. It was getting away without the ramifications of somebody then sort of saying you did something wrong. But with regards to the Bramley one, has nobody's been able to actually ascertain who these people are? Have we got another problem there in we don't know who's working on our track at various stages?
Yeah, there's always been this potential problem of, provided you've got a SAGS plan in your hand, doesn't matter as long as you are licensed to work on the infrastructure, Sentinel cars, you've got a SAGS plan in your hand and you work for somebody who's told you to go there, there is an element of no control over our infrastructure whatsoever. And that was something that Sacred Leader wanted to deal with.
So will the e-permit fix that?
Sorry, Esther.
Will the e-permit bring that more into line?
Yes, because when it does come back, and I think it's December 17 now, unless you are permitted in the national system, you cannot be there. Ergo, we know where everybody is. And that was one of the big benefits for me.
Okay. Thanks, Tracy.
Thank you, Alistair.
Thank you.
It's Isaac Kibble here. I think the other thing is with fair culture. Yeah, you know, we're trying to have a fair culture, trying to, and people believe that there is a fair culture and that we follow due process and investigate. And the whole reason of doing that is so it doesn't happen again. And so, it doesn't lead to discipline or whatever. Necessarily, we follow the fair culture, and the outcomes of that are all very clear. And we follow the flow chart, etc. And it's got to be reckless contravention for personal gain, etc. Is where we say we discipline people. And the one or two or three cases where that has happened, everybody sort of recognised that. And you know, the inner voice that says what's fair and reasonable says, yeah, no, that sounds right, sort of thing. In a case where you find yourself somewhere in a situation where
you got to jump or whatever for whatever reason. We want to get to the establish the reason for that. And it may be the safe system work wasn't adequate. Why was that? You know, that's the whole point of the investigation. But of course, you can't do the investigation unless somebody tells us what's happened, sort of thing, or, and feels safe to do so. So it's very key that we find out and people feel happy enough to do that. Hence us saying we want a fair culture and following the fair culture process because of the benefits of that.
But they do have to feel as though they're in the trusting environment to take that step.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, sorry. Any more?
Yeah, your next question comes from the line of...
Yes, indeed.
You're live in the call. Please go ahead.
Oh, sorry, I think my point has just been covered, so there isn't a different question there.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of...
Mark Johnson.
You're live in the call. Please go ahead.
Hello, Mark. How are you?
Hello, Tracy. I'm fine, thank you. You?
Yeah, I'm good.
Couple of points on this.
Speak up, we're losing you.
Couple of points on this. First of all, I think we need better feedback from investigations, outcomes, etc., etc., because we brief the guys on the safety hours and there never seems to any conclusion or resolution or feedback for them.
Right, can I ask you a question then?
Yeah, go on.
So the bit that goes into the safety cascade with the fair culture stuff and the investigation feedback, does that not work?
No, the links don't work.
No, just the information, not...
No.
So a brief, that was the incident, this is the investigation on where it is, and then ultimately the findings of the fair culture. That doesn't work for that market, is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, I don't think it does.
Right, okay.
Because if we had a more expansive plan on what the actions were, what happened and what the outcome was, we might dispel some of this fear factor.
So can I just check something else? So, and that is, so a safety bulletin, and the one on Danesfield should be out today, that doesn't work either. So safety bulletins don't work either?
Not unless it's an outcome. They work. Don't get me wrong, Tracy. They work because they highlight there is an issue or somebody's had an issue.
Yeah.
But I think the guys like to know what the outcome was or why it occurred.
Right. Okay.
It doesn't have to be the ins and outs of a duck, you know what.
Yeah.
But, you know, basic bits of this is what happened, this is what we were told, this is what we perceived, this is the way ahead.
And that's what, right, so tell me what you mean by outcome. What do you really need to know?
Ultimately, I think it's how it was dealt with. Ivan just emphasised the point with regard to the fair culture. I think a lot of people, especially the guys on the tools, think they're just going to get sacked. So if there's all some outcomes where it was, you know, they were given a warning or they were this was recommended, that may dispel it.
Right, you're talking about HR type outcome, are you?
No, I'm talking the outcome of an incident report of an incident we're told about, like today on the thing, signalling centre, the Shawford Junction, the Wokingham signal box, those sort of things.
Right, okay. So outcome in terms of investigation and outcomes in terms of fair culture as well.
Yes.
Okay.
Tracy, it's Giles. In operations, we share all the formal and local investigations with everybody. So everyone can say what happened, what the fair culture conclusion was, what actions we're going to take, what recommendations are made, who was involved in the investigation, you know, and ultimately who signed it off. So maybe that's something we could do in maintenance as well, yeah.
Right, okay.
You know, they're quite big documents and we need to work out an easy way of sharing
them. Summary.
We don't know what the outcome was.
Mark, the question then is, do you want all the investigations?
Yeah, because I can get the bones out of that and tell the guys what they want to know.
Right, okay. How about a Precy? Would that be better?
Yeah, fine.
Right, okay. We'll look at it, Mark. I don't want to create an additional industry. We'll look at a slip.
No, that's fine. No, it's actually fine. I've got another 2 points as well, Tracy.
Yeah, I was going to come back and said you can't have finished yet.
It's that many, many years ago, as you said, I did have a close call up at Plum Farm in between Hazelmere. And I think it's a perception of what is a close call. Because I didn't perceive what happened as a close call, but the driver reported it. So that is something we may need. That's an education line, I think.
Yeah, so we kind of pivot on this 10-second stuff, don't we? Anything under 10 seconds is kind of a near miss of the track worker, because PTS, basic PTS, is you've got to be in a place of safety within 10 seconds.
Correct.
There is a benefit in CCTV now, and actually you can work out exactly the times allowed and where people were. Yes, there is a perception thing in terms of what drivers call in. Interestingly enough, I did some work on this. Some drivers overdo it, some drivers underdo it.
Yeah, I think that's the same for the workforce on the track.
Yeah. So it is something to be borne in mind when you're doing an investigation, effectively.
Yep. And my last point is going on to yourselves, and especially the Bramley incident. We have always been told and educated within S&T that no matter where you go, it is courtesy that you contact the relevant signaller and tell him you are on his patch. And that has always been the same, and it always is now for S&T staff. Hence why the signaller contacted John Gilley when the Bramley incident happened, because he knew the S&T were there.
Yeah. And I know the S&T always let the signaller know where they are. And often we've had the debate about the P-Wave, but with the consideration that one, P-Wave phoning the signaller to say where they are, S&T invariably say, I'm here for 10 minutes, and or I'm here for 25 and I'll phone back when I leave. Other people might not be so attuned to signalman understanding and needs. So we'll talk about it. I'll have a chat with Giles and see what we think.
Okay.
Thank
That's
you. All right, take care, babe.
Thank you. We have no further questions, but just to remind you once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you do wish to ask a question, please key star then one on your telephone, record your name, and press the hash key. And we have no further questions.
Right, okay. Well, thank you, Lorraine. So, and thank you for everybody that called in. It's a bit lonely when nobody phones. A couple of things, a couple of closing things. One is, if anybody has any information or ideas that would help us dealing with the near miss with trains scenario, please ring either myself, Ivan, Dean, or Andy, or Giles. We would be very glad to hear from you. The second is we have to come up with a cunning plan and some actions in order to address this rising trend. We anticipate we will have something organised by the end of the week. And that will be cascaded down through the organisation, but we will let you know. Everybody has their part to play in this, because if a route suffers the loss of a man, it does affect the entire psyche of the organisation, and it takes a long time to get over. So, I will pass you to Ivan for the last couple of words. He's limited. And thank you very much for calling.
Tracy, we do have a further question. Would you like to take it?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. We don't have the caller's name, but if you do, if you did press star 1 to ask a question, you are now live in the call.
Hello, Tracy.
Hello.
It's Steve Edwards.
Ah, Mr. Edwards. Favourite safety advisor, how are you?
I'm great, thank you. Yourself?
I'm alright.
Good. It's just a quick one, more regarding the incident that happened at Bramley. It does say clearly it was a red zone working prohibited area. And obviously, if Safe Work Leader had gone as it was supposed to, we'd have had the whole planning. The planner sits with the cost, they go through everything together, gets authorised, and that had been picked up. But obviously, we don't know who the people were, but it had been picked up there and then. You can't go into that area without the protection in place because it's a red zone working prohibited area.
Yeah.
So how do we, is there a way we can get around this to basically put that process into place so that this sort of thing doesn't get missed, so that there is that conversation going on between the planner and the cost prior to somebody going out and having what could have been a catastrophic incident?
Right. Two things, really. In a plan-safe system of work, in theory, planner plans and cause verifies the shift in advance, except for those who signed off by a section manager, a cyclical. Safe Work Leader would have assisted because all the permits are in the system, but this is the interesting point. If an area is a red zone, prohibited area for working, if you're in a SAMP system or a Procyon system, are you going to use those systems? Because the system shouldn't let you out there anyway. And what I mean by that is, if you knowingly go out to a red zone prohibited area, would you have a SAMP plan in your hand? So there is an element of that behaviour that no system will stop because it's personal choice. Does that answer the question?
My worry there is, if they did have a SELP, have they actually, as whoever it was, taken the time to actually read it?
Yeah.
Are people actually looking at it and going through those details and going, there's the hazard directory like portion for the area I'm going to be working?
Yeah.
Are they actually taking the time to look at it and pick up on, or do they just go out there and go, well, this is the thing, it says this, that and the other, but they're not just picking up those fine details which do make the difference?
Two things. One is, for the Bramley incident, there was no sanctioning system for that day at that location. The second thing is, in a SAMP pack, you want the information that is relevant, i.e. red zone prohibited area in a wider work site, to be the top bit of information in a plan. And I would hope that would be the case because it's the highest risk to your man or woman. Okay?
Yes, absolutely.
All right, thanks, Steve.
No, not at all. Thank you.
Thank you, and we have no further questions.
Right, do you
want to
close,
Ivan? Yeah, just we have a big responsibility, each of us, to look after our colleagues and ourselves, and we have the life-saving rules for a reason. They save lives, and that's all about the life-saving rule of having a safe system of work. So for me here, is making sure that we've got a safe system of work for everything that we're doing, and that we're following that safe system of work. So we'll get some material out for a stand-down brief that everybody will do, such that we can discuss and understand and appreciate the risks, etc. So thank you very much, everyone, for listening, and we need to be very careful and safe when we carry our work out. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Tracy and Ivan. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes your conference call for today. You may now disconnect. Thank you for joining, and enjoy the rest of your day.